This is our 56th draft in NHL history, and it's the first one here in Dallas. That's better. So, Dallas, let's get started. The first selection of the 2018 NHL draft belongs to the Buffalo Sabres.
Welcome to 31 Thoughts, the podcast brought to you by the all-new 2018 GMC Terrain. Special edition of the pod this week. This is moments after the conclusion of the first round of the 2018 NHL draft. Jeff Merrick alongside Elliot Friedman. Nick Kyprios joins us from Sportsnet, Hockey Night in Canada. But first word goes to Elliot Friedman. Sum up what you just saw and were part of over the last 3 hours, about 4 hours here in Dallas.
Not as much as I thought I was going to see, eh? Like, we were expecting stuff to happen. We didn't get a lot of stuff happening.
Somewhat disappointing because we do know that there was a lot of storylines with various clubs, right, Elliot?
Mm-hmm.
From the Montreal Canadiens and what they were going to do with their early pick. The Islanders continue to push to try to maybe set up a situation that invites John Tavares to resign. That didn't necessarily happen, although you certainly like the picks that the Islanders had at 11 and 12. Maybe that might be enough, but there's no question that behind the scenes, I'm sure a lot of talk, but not enough to make any particular club pull the trigger.
And it seemed as if every general manager that you spoke to, one of the consistent questions, Elliot, was, are you surprised that there's a lack of action, a lack of anything going on? There's plenty of dialogue, as Nick points out, plenty of dialogue around this, plenty of dialogue leading into this. You wonder if day two is going to bear more fruit, but, I mean, that was an underwhelming first round. We'll get to the picks in a second, but as far as draft day trades, a couple teams switched spots.
Well, we did get the one. We got the one, Orpik and Grubauer for the 47th pick, but Colorado's going to let Orpik go find his own space right now. You're right. Like, you know, Pierre Dorion said tonight,
it's been the quietest day this week so far. Making calls today, I remember talking to a GM at about 2:30 today. Said, so what's going on today? And he said, you're the first call I got. So it's been a very quiet day today. We haven't seen many trades. To my best of my knowledge, just I think one NHL trade as far as players involved on roster. And obviously we're always going to listen. But today it was about taking two good players and we're really happy with our two selections.
Like there was nothing. And I got to think, guys, some of it's Tavares. Like teams are waiting. Where's Tavares going? I think some of it's Kovalchuk. Teams are waiting Kovalchuk. John Carlson. Is John Carlson going to sign? Now you think it's more likely based on what the Capitals did tonight?
We have a trade.
Okay, we interrupt this podcast to bring you more podcasts. The plan was to release this earlier on today, but then drama. Calgary, Carolina, Los Angeles, Ilya Kovalchuk. So we're doing this insert. Me from my home, tie line to my studio in the basement of my house in Stouffville. Elliot, fresh off the plane, just landed. He's in the car on his way home. Elliot, do you want to address the trade or the signing first? The floor is yours.
Let's do the trade first because obviously, you know, we're Hockey Night in Canada. There's a Canadian team involved here. We should look at that.
Okay, Noah Hanifin, Elias Lindholm go to a coach that they're very familiar with, Bill Peters. They go to the Calgary Flames in exchange for Dougie Hamilton, Michael Ferland, and Adam Fox. Hanifin without contract. Elias Lindholm is ARB eligible as well. Dougie Hamilton, 3 years at 5.75. That's a nice deal. Michael Ferland, 1 year at 1.75. Initial wide brush thought on this one, Elliot.
You know, I saw Brad Treliving, the general manager of the Flames, meeting with Matt Cater, who's the family advisor. I always have to be careful to call them family advisors in the NCAA. Matt Cater is the one for Adam Fox. And to me, that was a conversation on Friday night before the draft, round one, that was about what is going on here? Are you going to sign? Now, just to give you some added perspective on Adam Fox, last year, I believe the Islanders for him in the Travis Hamonic deal. And the Flames did not want to include him because they still hope to sign him. But now I think this is pretty clear that they didn't think they were going to be able to sign him, and that was a key final piece in the deal. You know, it's interesting. I think the part of the deal, the reason that Carolina does this deal, is the salary certainty of Hamilton and to a lesser degree, Ferland. You mentioned Hamilton's contract. Hanifin needs a new deal. Lindholm needs a new contract. And the word is that the conversations between the two of them were not going well. So I just think that Carolina looked at it as, these players are going to cost us money that we don't want to pay, and we're going to go in another direction.
Looks like Noah Hanifin is going to be paired with Travis Hamonic, and looks like Elias Lindholm will take that first-line spot and play with Sean Monahan and Johnny Gaudreau. So it looks like those are at least initially the landing pads for those two players. From the Carolina point of view, and a lot of people have looked at this, and I mean, it's the old Sam Pollock saying, Elliot, whomever, you know, gets the best player in the trade wins the trade. Do you look at this deal and say, Dougie Hamilton's the best player in the deal, therefore Carolina wins this trade?
I think right now you look at Dougie Hamilton as the best player in the deal, but I think that both Lindholm and Hanifin have a chance to say something about that. You know, Hamilton scored 17 goals last year, and, you know, if you look at it, he really wasn't a full-time top power play guy for half of the year. It took him a couple of months before he got into that spot. Here's the thing that I don't like about all of this, Jeff, is that sometimes when a guy gets traded, he gets crapped on the way out. I don't like that. I mean, if you have something bad to say about a guy, say it to his face. I just feel this. He's been traded twice now, and he's a talented player. There's something there that we're not seeing, and that's all I want to say. It's, you know, we don't know what's going on in the room. You know, sometimes guys have been traded out of a situation, and it's been their fault. And sometimes guys have been traded out of a situation, and it's been other guys' fault. But whatever the case is, he's been dealt twice with all of his talent, and you just wonder, what is that? But the fact is, he had a great year last year. I think there were things about him that frustrated the Flames, but I just feel that both Hanifin and Lindholm have a chance to be the best players of this trade. They just need to get to another level. Both of them.
You have a look at the Carolina Hurricanes defense right now, and you add Dougie Hamilton to the mix, and you have Jacob Slavin, you have Justin Falk. Might want to revisit Justin Falk in a second here if he may end up getting dealt or if he stays. Pesci, Trevor Van Riemsdyk, they'll graduate someone probably from Charlotte as well. There's a handful of guys that can make that transition. All of a sudden, what was already a pretty dynamic defense looks more like a wall than ever before, Elliot.
It does, but I do think, as you mentioned, revisit Falk. I know Detroit was interested in him. I think he's in a situation where he possibly will not be there. I think there's a decent chance of that. I'd also heard that the negotiations between Carolina and Van Riemsdyk for a new deal weren't going all that great. During the year, I had heard that Carolina, under Ron Francis, wanted to keep Van Riemsdyk and extend him. I still think there's a possibility of that, but I heard it's been a real grind. So I don't know where that's going to go. I mean, the other thing with Carolina, too, now is Skinner. And I believe there is a small number of teams. He's got a no-move clause. I believe there's a small number of teams, probably around five, that he has told the Hurricanes he will go to.
I was going to say, I want to get to that when we talk about Ilya Kovalchuk, the guys that are still out there, and Skinner's on that list. You wonder what happens there. You wonder what happens with Justin Falk. But the one thing you don't wonder about, and we talked about this at the end of the season for the Hurricanes, addressing the idea of being too soft a team, getting pushed around a little bit too much. And how much does Michael Ferland address that issue specifically?
Well, I did speak to Tom Dundon late in the year, and I asked him about the accusations that they were that, and he admitted it. He said that he had been told internally that that was a big problem, and I do think that is one of the reasons that Ferland is in the deal. And, you know, it's interesting. I had some guys tell me that they thought that Lindholm was a guy who contributed to that. And you don't have to be a killer. You don't have to destroy people. But I think if Lindholm gets some bite to his game and just a bit of an edge, boy, I think he has a chance to be a terrific player for Calgary.
Sure does. Carolina not done by any stretch of the imagination here dealing in the offseason. I mean, Falk's name and Skinner's name, but are those the only two suspects here?
I think there was some Victor Rask talk over the draft. I believe that Montreal was talking to Carolina about Victor Rask. I think he's a player they're interested in moving. So I think we're going to hear a lot about them. I don't know if I would say Carolina was disappointed. They only made the one move. I don't know if that's the right way to put it, but I knew there was the possibility they would have a couple of moves coming out of here.
So a couple of hours ago, someone just sent me a text saying, what's up with the Calgary Flames trying to corner the market on the 2013 draft? I wrote back, what are you talking about? Because they have six players from the first round. Now they have Lindholm. They also have Monahan, Lazar, who's restricted, Poirier, Shinkarik, and Klimchuk as well. Now, they're all restricted.
Wow.
But that's six players from the first round in 2013 that are now property of the Calgary Flames. So everything 2013 is groovy for the Calgary Flames. Okay, so there's the one issue. The other issue is Ilya Kovalchuk signing with the Los Angeles Kings. Three-year contract, 6.25 is the AAV, to which Elliot Friedman says...
I think it's probably one more year than a lot of people were willing to give. Now, there's another story that goes along with this. So L.A. was the team, and I do think Kovalchuk wanted to go. Once the Rangers weren't involved, I do think L.A. was a very serious, if not number one, when the Rangers were out of it. But there was a lot of teams here that didn't want to go to 3 years. And finally, the Kings did it. Now, the other tie into this is Max Pacioretty. I think something happened on Saturday night where the Canadians and the Kings were getting close. And now everybody is well aware that Pat Brisson was Max Pacioretty's agent until either Saturday night / Sunday morning. And now it's Alan Walsh. And I think what happened is, and it's a difficult story to kind of pin down, but I think that the Kings and the Canadians were talking, and the Kings and the Canadians were working on an extension, and he was going to be traded with that extension, and everything fell apart. And I don't know if it was Patrick didn't like the terms of the extension. I think that may have had something to do with it, or there was an issue with the trade. But the bottom line is, at that point, Pacioretty made an agent change. He went to Walsh. So I think that the whole thing with Pacioretty combined said to the Kings, we can't go down that route, and they went the third year on Kovalchuk.
So hang on. So then if we can just detour here for a second, then the Pacioretty situation, if I'm hearing you correctly, he will be traded, but it will be a sign-and-trade, so you get the extra year in?
Well, I don't necessarily think it's going to be an eight-year deal. I just think that Pacioretty would love to get 8 years, but when his extension kicks in, you know, he's in his 30s. Yeah. So I do think that that's an issue for whoever tries to take him. No, I just think it was a sign and trade because I think the Canadians and the Kings wanted some certain, or the Kings especially, want some certainty. They don't want to acquire Pacioretty with just 1 year to go before he's UFA, and the Canadians get a better deal if he's only one, if he's more than 1 year to go and they have some security. I just think that whether it was Pacioretty didn't like the extension or whatever it was, something fell apart there and caused the deal to be killed that had the Kings go to Kovalchuk and give him the third year.
Okay, let's get back to Kovalchuk. And props to Matt Kennedy on Twitter who tweeted this one out a while ago. Ilya Kovalchuk just pulled off the most time-consuming, if you can't beat him, join him move of all time. So he is now a member of the Los Angeles Kings, of course, formerly the New Jersey Devils. Nice line there by Matt Kennedy. A few questions here. He's 35-plus, so there's going to be no relief no matter what happens. This thing is on the books. To that, I say, on the one hand, it may look scary if you're the Los Angeles Kings, if you're a Kings fan. Uh-oh, you know, here are another aging player on our roster consuming cap space. But then when I look at it, I mean, they are locked into old guys anyhow. Like, they're a lot old guys. Well, it's all relative, but they're locked into older players, whether it's Quick, whether it's Phaneuf, whether it's Brown, whether it's Carter, whether it's even Anze Kopitar. Like, Drew Doughty when he signs his new deal. Like, they're locked into an older crew, which is the nucleus of this team. And it's a three-year deal. I understand that 3 years is a long time, and it would have been more palatable to do too. But I say, listen, if you're the Los Angeles Kings and this is the core of your team, you've just surrounded that core with another player that can help you win right now and not build to the future.
Well, I think that it shows how important guys like Tyler Toffoli and Tanner Pearson are. And the other thing is, I do know that when Montreal was talking to them about Pacioretty at some point, they really tried to get their hands on Gabe Vilardi, a player you know really well.
Yeah.
And I think the Kings fought that off. Like, they just said, we're not doing that. So I think you're right. It's definitely an older roster, and they're going to extend Drew Doughty. I think everybody's expecting that they're going to get a deal done. We're at a point now where Doughty, and I just think that the Kings look at that and they say, this is our best chance to win. But I think they hope that their younger guys are going to be a big factor in it.
Now, according to Cap Friendly, this puts Los Angeles at $76.3 million with 20 players signed, 12 forwards, 60, and two goaltenders. Do they need to make some moves here before next fall, Elliot?
Well, I mean, what are the moves? Like I'm looking at this, like, who on that roster are you dealing?
Okay, who are you dealing? Who are the guys you can move? You have Alex Iafallo, who is he's in at 9-2-5. Not going to move him. Not going to move Adrian
Kepi. He looked like a good player.
I'm just going through the lineup here. I mean, you can move a $2 million Trevor Lewis, two more years remaining there. Pearson Toffoli, no there.
Lewis is a center, so he'll have value. Like, if you want to do that, look at this draft. You can always find room for centers.
Right.
If that's what they want to do, I think Trevor Lewis would definitely have value.
One of the defensemen? Jake Muzzin, Alec Martinez?
I mean, they've been in trade rumors for a long time. So I guess anything is possible. The one thing is, you have one more year to really go at it before Doughty's huge number kicks in, whatever it's going to be. So I think if you're the Kings, you're looking at this, you're saying, we're going at this for a year with the best roster possible. And if you got something that makes our roster better, you come to us. But unless you get a dynamite trade, like, I don't think you're trading Martinez and Muzzin necessarily for futures. I think they're going at it and saying, you got to come at us with something that makes us better for next year, because after next year, our salary structure is going to change.
So why Kovalchuk? Hasn't played in the NHL in 5 years. I mean, maybe the obvious question is the one that we should have asked off the top. Can he still play at that same NHL level? We don't know. He's played in the KHL. The power play at 20%, 17th in the NHL. Goals for 16th in the NHL, 237 goals. You're going to think Kovalchuk addresses both of those issues, specifically the power play. But maybe the one question is one that we can't answer until next season, and that is, can he still play at that same Kovalchuk level?
Well, we'll find out. Like, I think the Kings were just determined to find offense. Like, one of the rumors that was going around the weekend was that they might go for two scorers. Like, they might go for two of Kovalchuk, Pacioretty, Skinner. Now, obviously, that's not going to happen. I mean, the Kovalchuk number proves that idea wasn't going to work. But I think it shows that how much they felt they need scoring. And the one thing about Kovalchuk is, and it's a risk, as you mentioned, because it's an over 35 deal, but all it costs you is money. Like, Pacioretty and Skinner were going to cost you players. Look what Calgary had to pay to, in terms of players, to get two very good ones. You know, L.A., I just don't think they were willing to do that. I think at the end of the day, you know, we talked about Vilardi. They weren't giving up Vilardi for Pacioretty. Now, imagine what Carolina was asking for Skinner. The one thing I really believe is free agents, yes, the risk you take is with the contracts, but the reward is they only cost you money. And you don't have to give up, if you don't want to give up your best prospects, or you can't give up your best prospects, you don't have to do that with free agents. And I think L.A. said, that's the way we're going to go.
Okay, Elliot, it sounds like you're out of the car, standing in your driveway, waiting to go inside. We will now house.
No, no, no. We can't do that yet. We have to do Tavares. Before we go, we have to talk Tavares. I am on my driveway. We have to mention that we're doing this on Saturday night, just after I landed, an addendum to the podcast, and it's a drive home. And I hope I'm not keeping my neighbors awake. But anyone who's heard me on TV or radio knows I don't have a good voice, so that shouldn't be a problem.
Who's this strange man screaming about Noah Hanifin and Ilya Kovalchuk around midnight on Saturday? Okay, John Tavares, where are we at, and how much of a clog was John Tavares this weekend by way of trades in the NHL?
It was some. Like, I think it affected, I mean, there's two things I think that affected Ryan O'Reilly. One was Tavares, and two is his bonus that's due next week. Now, I think St. Louis is sniffing around O'Reilly, at least. I think Arizona did a bit. I'm not sure that that's what they're going to do, but I think
Montreal.
St. Louis, Montreal. I got to tell you, like, the Montreal thing, you know, Botterill asked a big price, the third overall pick, and the Canadiens weren't willing to do that. I think one of the tough things that Botterill's facing is that bonus, because I think there are teams that look at it and say, hey, you want us to pay the bonus? Well, there's one cost, and if you don't want us to pay the bonus, you're going to do it? Well, maybe yeah. we'll give you a little bit more. So I think that's kind of what he's weighing. But I think it did affect some of this of the moves a little bit.
Okay, so where are we at on John Tavares right now? Pat Brisson's saying he's going to speak to five different teams yes. next week, Elliot?
Yes, and I think that the five, some combination of the five is, I think San Jose is definitely there.
Yep.
I think they're on the list. I think Toronto is definitely there. I think they're on the list. L.A. has admitted they're out. They're not there. Larry Brooks today reported the Rangers aren't there. I don't think the Islanders officially count. I think they're outside of that top five. I do believe I heard as I was leaving the draft today that Lou Lamoriello was actually going to Los Angeles, though. Like, he wants to be in the area there. So I think that's pretty fascinating. So we've got two teams we know of plus the Islanders. I think Dallas is one of the teams. Now, while reporters went to ask Jim Neal, he wouldn't talk about it. That's par for the course. That, I would tend to believe, makes it three. The other two, my guess is it's some combination of Tampa Bay, Boston, Chicago. I thought St. Louis might get an audience, but it doesn't sound like it.
Okay, so San Jose, Toronto, Dallas, Tampa, and a combination of either Boston or Chicago.
Well, I don't know Tampa for sure. The other two are, I would guess, two of Tampa, Chicago, and Boston. As we are doing this right now, I think it is Toronto, San Jose, Dallas, and two of Boston, Chicago, and Tampa. That's my guess.
It's interesting because Boston was in on Ilya Kovalchuk, and it seems as if now they may turn attention back to Rick Nash to try to bring him into the mix. But if you have someone like John Tavares available.
I have to tell you, I got a text tonight saying that there's word that Rick Nash is considering retirement. So I
saw
don't know. Okay, so that's true? I
don't know. There was a report that I read about an hour ago before you came on.
Okay, so like if he's considering retirement, and I can understand it, the guy's probably got about $70 million in the bank, and he's 34 years old, and, you know, I could see the possibility of it. So, I mean, like, if you're Boston and you're trying to win the Stanley Cup, I think you're weighing right now, and somebody's thinking of retirement, is that the way you want to go? So, you know, I understand why Nash might be considering that.
How would you handicap that field, the San Jose, Toronto, Dallas, and then the combination of Tampa, Boston, Chicago?
Well, I'll tell you this. I think if you leave the Islanders out of that field, you're making a big mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I do think the Islanders are still very much in this. And it doesn't help the Islanders right away, but they're one of the real winners of the draft.
They did a great job, specifically in the first round.
Like,
those
like
two picks
they took two, like, you know, like, they took two guys who fell to them. I don't think any of us thought, never mind both. Like, I don't know how many of us thought one of those two guys would be available. And if I'm Tavares, it doesn't help me now, but, okay, Jeff, you're the expert. We don't have cause here. How soon can Wahlstrom play, do you think?
A couple years. He's not walking in next season, but he's someone that can score.
How soon can Dobson play?
I think Dobson can play not next season, but the season after. I think he goes one more year junior, and then he plays. He still needs to put on about 20 pounds. But that,
okay.
I think Dobson's the home run there. And I love Oliver Wahlstrom. I mean, listen, goals are expensive, and this is a shoot first, ask questions second kind of guy.
So if you're Tavares, and first of all, he's smart, and second, think someone's going to explain this to him. If he's going to sign an 8-year deal and say it's $12 million a year, okay, you're going to need good players on their entry-level contracts. Like, I would wonder if he would look at that and say, we didn't get a player who can come now, but in 2 years, when I'm 2 years into this big contract, am I going to have these two guys coming in on their ELCs that can make a difference?
You know what my big question still is? If I'm John Tavares and I'm worried about roster composition, who's stopping mm-hmm. pucks?
Yeah, that's they the have to one. Sort that out. Now, I had heard one of the things is by Grubauer going to Colorado, number one, like I wonder if the Islanders make a pitch for Varlamov or Bernier.
Hmm.
Like there's teams out there that need goalies. Like if I'm Colorado,
yep.
Who wants a motivated Varlamov on the last year of his contract?
For sure. I mean, take your pick. I mean, Buffalo would make some sense. Because yes. Linus Ullmark, I think they're comfortable playing half a season in the NHL yes. And then graduating to the starter position next the year after this one coming up.
Yes.
See, the two teams that jump out at me are Buffalo and the Islanders.
I think Ottawa will try to make a change in goal, too.
Ottawa, I mean, Craig Anderson has asked for a trade.
So yes.
And he's going into his good year now, Elliot.
Yes, he's going through his good year now. Absolutely. I think there's a lot of truth to that. That's what I wonder if the trip is. But I don't think this weekend, getting those two players, I can't imagine that hurt the Islanders. I think the other thing is the Islanders getting more games at the Coliseum. That is an underrated aspect to all of this when the schedule came out. I heard Lamoriello really push for it. I can't imagine that hurts. I think if we are handicapping this field, I still think I personally would put the Islanders at the top.
Hey, just as a sidebar to all of this, how long do you think Lou stays there?
Do you get the sense, like people said to me when he was in Toronto, oh, he's 70-something years old. He doesn't want to do this forever.
I don't think he's winding down.
No.
I think this guy wants to keep his boots on. I don't think this guy wants to take his boots off at all.
Yeah,
no way.
I think look, if you saw him this weekend, Jeff, he loved it.
Yeah.
He loved being right in the middle of the action.
Every time I looked up to my little perch where I was in section 119 and 120, he was talking to a different general manager.
Yeah.
Just up and down the aisles. Yeah.
He loved it. Yeah, he loved it. The one yes. last thing, too. Dallas, in addition to the whole Tavares thing, there's a couple of teams who think that they are, and we don't know if they'll get Tavares, but there's a couple of teams who think they are one of the stealth clubs on Carlson. Eric.
That Dallas is?
Yes.
Wouldn't surprise me. I think, honestly, I think Dallas needs to upgrade at every single position. I really do.
I've heard that they're one of the teams that's kind of looking around there.
Listen, once the John Tavares situation is all cleaned up, and he makes his decision and, you know, and he's solid somewhere, all eyes are going to turn to Tyler Seguin, who's going to be the next edition of John Tavares or, before that, Steven Stamkos. Is he going to stay or is he going to bolt? And where's the decimal point going to be? And if he's not seeing things going the right way in Dallas, does a player like Tyler Seguin want to stay? Much like the Islanders audition this year for John Tavares, do we see the Dallas Stars do the same for Tyler Seguin next season?
Yep. And I think the Stars know that they're going to have to pay him big and possibly even more than Ben because of percentage of the salary cap. Yep. But the one thing I've heard about Seguin is he likes Dallas.
That's true. I've heard the same thing.
He likes it there. And that is a big part of the battle.
Okay. Now you're allowed to go inside your house.
Okay. I can stop pacing around.
Key in the door.
Driveway.
Yeah. You look kind of creepy out there for each. Like, seriously. Neighbors are starting to make phone calls. All right, Elliot, get inside the house. And we now return you to your regularly scheduled podcast. So, an interesting day by way of selection, because if you're
Can I do one thing first while Nick's here? Okay,
yeah.
So Nick and I, we play in a golf tournament together every year for Carrie's Place. It's in a place that gives helps adults who have autism in terms of life skills, finding jobs, placement, stuff like that. And I played in it last week, and Nick couldn't be there, but we like to play in it together. And a guy came up to me and he says, "How much would it cost me for you to read about my wedding on the podcast?" And I said, "If you show me a receipt for $100, I'll read about your upcoming wedding on the podcast."
That's it? 100?
I know.
$100? Is
you know
he listening
what?
Right now?
Wow.
Because I think he got in real cheap at $100.
You know, Nick, I am so lame, and I'll tell you why for this reason. Because he went right to the front and paid the $100. So I knew I undercharged him. But his name is Ryan Kennedy. He lives in Kitchener. He's getting married on August the 11th. to Jenna Mitchell. Now, Jenna Mitchell, who I have no doubt is the much more attractive of the pair after seeing Ryan.
Very good.
Her dad is Paul Mitchell, who used to own the Kitchener Dutchman. So, like the old junior team. So, Jenna Mitchell, Ryan Kennedy, August 11th. And I'm letting all of you who are listening know, the next time you want this mentioned, and I'll be happy to do it, it's going to cost you more than $100.
Yeah, and just a quick shout-out to John Tackleberry, a good friend of mine who got me involved with that amazing charity. Great guy, does a great job on the committee, and happy to support.
Tackleberry is in the tax family.
There you go.
All right, very good. Very nice. So not so much by way of trade today, and this day has almost turned into a quasi-trade deadline day and has more action than the actual trade deadline has. So that was a little bit quiet, but a lot of surprise selections. 1-2, not at all, Rasmus Dahlin, Andrei Svechnikov. They go 1-2. And then it was over to Mark Bergevin. And
to make our selection, Director of Amateur Scouting and former Dallas star Shane Schurrle will make the announcement.
From asset of the Finnish Elite League, Jesperi Kotkaniemi.
The speculation was always, if you want Jesperi Kotkaniemi, you can move down a couple of spots, a maximum of maybe 2, maybe 3. But the wisdom behind just saying, he's our guy, much like Columbus with Pierre-Luc Dubois a couple of years ago in Buffalo, he's our guy, we're just going to take him.
I always get the sense that Bergevin tried to trade down, but he couldn't do it. Not where he was comfortable.
Well, there's no doubt, Elliot, that he's really between a rock and a hard place in terms of protecting the future of the Montreal Canadiens and the need to also improve in a short period of time here. I'm still not convinced that he's got all the time in the world to turn this thing around. It's the Montreal Canadiens. I don't know whether or not it's acceptable that they can finish in 28th overall or 30th overall.
You don't get the sense that everybody above Mark Bergevin is kind of cool with doing a rebuild here and moving out Max Pacioretty? And
that's not an issue. I mean, you're going to move out Pacioretty, but you have to find centermen and you have to find a way to help Max Domi score 20 goals next year, mm-hmm. right? Like Max Pacioretty, who we all believe is a better goal scorer than Max, couldn't get 20 this year because of the lack of centermen. So the deal for Max Domi, don't kid yourself, there's going to be some pressure on Max to produce somewhat because, say what you will, I mean, Galchenyuk, if you believe he's a 30-goal scorer or not, scored 30 goals once.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody says he's a 30-goal scorer.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of pressure, I think, to compete next year. Not saying that they have to make the playoffs, but there has to be a level of acceptance in Montreal, and I don't necessarily think that means mailing it in for the next 2 or 3 years and building through the draft. I don't know. Do you guys get the sense that Bergevin has the luxury that Brendan Shanahan had a few years ago where they could sit there and say, hey,
I don't know if the rope is that long, but I kind of get the sense that that everyone above him, and that would have to go all the way up to the top, to Jeffrey Molson, is kind of okay with the idea that we're going to take a couple of steps back here. You buy that, Elliot?
I do, but I know what Nick is saying here. Nick is saying not that your theory is wrong, that they have to take a couple of steps back to get to where they need to go. But what Nick is saying is that there's a real crisis of confidence in Montreal right now. Like, you know, you look at what's happening in Ottawa and you look at what's happening in Montreal. I really do not like to kick people when they're down, so I really want to avoid that. But what Nick is saying is that, are the fans going to buy what they're selling? They're selling something. Are the fans going to buy it?
But that's it. What are they selling? Are they selling? You think that they're selling wins, or are they selling wins down the road, i.e., hope?
Rebuild on the fly.
Yeah, I'm with Elliot.
What does that mean?
That means he might finish 17th or 18th overall, but I don't think 28th or 29th is acceptable. Maybe if you look at the New York Rangers right now, you think they're in a similar situation where they're going to finish for the next few years.
They seem
27th.
The Rangers seem content to ride it out and say, look, we have Filip Hedl, we have Elias Andersson up the gut, and we're going to build around all that.
But are the New York Rangers, with what they have already, in a situation where they're going to be a bottom 6th or 17th in the league? I don't see that happening with Lundqvist. And I don't see it happening with a healthy Carey Price.
Well, I think the surprise is that Lundqvist seems to be okay with being part of this. Now, it's one thing to say it. It's another thing to do it and be part of blowout games every single night. And then the frustration level that comes along with that. And eventually some players just say, I want to get out of here. Like, okay, I philosophically understood what we were trying to do here, but this is too much pain for me this late in my career, and I still haven't won a Stanley Cup yet. So I can maybe see the same thing for Carey Price. Like, I don't – like, if you look at who the Montreal Canadiens selected, Jesperi Kotkaniemi, is he playing next year?
No.
No. So if they wanted to do, like, a rebuild on the fly, would you not look at someone like Brady Tkachuk who could step in next year, unlike Jesperi Kotkaniemi or Filip Zadina?
You know why? No, because your whole message has been – we need center and D. Like, I understand they like Brady Tkachuk. Pierre Dorion was worried about them taking Brady Tkachuk. But if you're sitting there saying, we're selling, we need center and D, and you don't do either, what are you going to get? It's a tire fire. Like, the thing you have to present is a plan. And I really think that if you're going to go out there and say, we need this, and you don't do this, you're asking for it. What's Burke's line? You're stupid in two languages.
That's right. Yeah, tonight. You're dumb in English and you're dumb in French.
Now, there were some rumblings coming out today. I was surprised Ottawa took Tkachuk because there were some rumblings coming out today that he was going to go back to college if he didn't get the right spot. And the first thing I thought of was the Senators because, you know, everything they've kind of gone through.
I totally buy that. But are you suggesting that the pressure would come from the Tkachuk camp? Or if I'm the Ottawa Senators, I'd want to protect him by keeping him out of the environment that we're presently in.
Well, somebody's got to go there. Right?
I would not. I'd tell him to stay in school.
Yeah.
Go to BU, score 20 goals.
Hey, if you're ready, you're going to play. Like, look at our team right now. Look at the mess.
Yeah.
It's still somewhat toxic there. Why would you invite an 18-year-old kid to come there as early as October and play?
You know what, Nick? I think that makes a lot of sense. Like, I like the pick. I think that kid has a chance to be a really good player.
That's right.
I think that's a good point.
But stay in school, and when you're ready, another year, and when we have our house in order, when we're a little clearer on our focus and our commitment to certain players, and we flesh out the ones that we want to get out, then you bring them in.
I like that.
You like that one?
I like that.
I think it's a smart play by Ottawa to go to Brady Tkachuk in that spot. I know that you may be looking for someone to compliment, someone like Thomas Chabot on your blue line. You're going to lose Erik Karlsson. But when you're looking at someone like Tkachuk at that spot, I don't know how you turn him down.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. With that, we welcome you to the 31 Thoughts podcast.
Buffalo Sabres are proud to select Frölunda defenseman Rasmus Dahlin.
Please be joined now, Elliot and Nick, by Sam Cosentino, who has not run out of words yet. And you use a lot of them on TV, and you're saving some for the podcast. Sam, great job tonight alongside Louis DeBrusque and Brian Burke on our main panel this evening. The obvious question, what surprised you about the draft? Because there were a few eyebrow-raising moments.
There were a few eyebrow-raising moments. You know, there's a couple of them. Barrett Hayton as high as he went. But Arizona identified a guy. They jumped up and got him. Kotkaniemi, of course, at 3.
Yep.
We kind of expected that, though. But it did turn the rest of the picks upside down, again, as we expected. No surprise with Dubas trading back to acquire. I think I went on radio a couple of times and mentioned that that was going to be an option. But Ryan Merkley's the big surprise for me.
San Jose selects from Guelph Ryan Merkley.
I talked to several teams that had him on a definite no-trade list.
No draft list.
No draft list, sorry. Yep. And we talked about this guy at the prospects game. I'm not denying his talent one bit. There's too much noise there. Now, everyone's saying he's going to go into a San Jose room and it'll be fine. Well, he's not going into the San Jose room next year.
No.
He might not be going in 2 years after that. Which guys are going to be left in San Jose 3 years from now?
Logan Couture.
All right. Does Logan Couture want that responsibility towards the end of his career?
But they also bank 3 years from now. He will not have the same attitude he has today. that's what they're banking on.
Well, I think people that drafted Anthony DeAngelo thought the same thing. He's on his third team 3 years after he was drafted. I think they thought the same thing about Josh Hosang.
Oh,
Josh Hosang is trying to find his way through. Kirill Kabanov. I mean,
no question.
The lists are the lists are. Now, I don't want to rip the kid too much because he's still a kid. And we all did stupid things when we were a kid. God forbid someone goes back and...
More so you, Sam,
than
us.
From what I've heard, like, you were like the biggest cement head ever.
Oh, yeah, no question. No question about it. But there are still those things. When you're investing in a player, there's still those things to consider. But use your resources, support him as best you can, and hope that he takes to the support that you're trying to offer him. Because I know Guelph tried on a couple of occasions with some support things that he was not all that willing to participate in.
You had an interesting interview with Doug Wilson about Ryan Merkley, and that logic made a lot of sense about how Doug Wilson was talking about handling this player specifically.
Well, we spent a lot of time with him. You know, we asked some of the tough questions. We liked the way he handled it. He's one of the youngest kids in the draft. He's got a tremendous upside to him in his skill set, but the answers that he gave us made us feel comfortable looking him in the eye that you know, he wants to be a great player, and hockey is what he wants to do. And you know, it might be a few things that maybe he'd do differently, but we're very proud to have him. We really are.
And your group, like, you've talked about the maturity of your core group. Do you feel that that was instrumental in this too?
You know, he's a young man, you know, and I think watching him play, I think he just has to channel some of his frustrations a little bit differently. It's because he wants to compete and he wants to win so badly. But, you know, we think getting him in with our group, and we've got a great development staff, and we see a real high end in this player.
You know, someday it'll all come out a bit more, like what kinds of questions they asked him and how he handled it. Like, look at the guys in that organization, like Brian Marchment, Mike Ricci. Like, you talk about the guys who are there now. Like, Joe Thornton, if he wants to be, is going to be a Shark in some capacity forever. And they're still going to have Burns, and they're still going to have Vlasic, and they're still going to have Couture, and they're still going to have Pavelski. Like, the development guys, and Peter DeBoer, who's tough, but the development guys, like Ricci and Marchment, like, I think those guys, if you can't get straightened out by those guys,
don't underestimate the success of Evander Kane in a short period of time. It probably gives the organization confidence to bring in somebody and say, hey, listen, if our room is strong enough, we can help you.
That used to be the Glenn Sather reclamation project motif. To what Sam is saying, at the Top Prospects game this year, we sat down with you with all the prospects. And one of the questions I asked him in front of the group was, what do people have wrong about you? And the you remember this, Sam. The first thing out of his mouth right away, he said, the thing that people have misunderstood about me is that my teammates don't like me. Like, it's the first thing that's on his mind. It's almost as if he went into the interview and knew that at some point he was going to say that. So he's very much aware that that's a thing. And that's part of that noise that's around Ryan Merkley.
I don't know if that's a thing, to be honest with you. I've heard teammates are just okay with him. The thing is, he's almost idiot savant-like in hockey, that when something doesn't go his way on the ice, he gets ticked. He's got bad body language. He'll come and he'll slap a stick in the bench and whatever else. But that's only because there's so many guys who can't play to that level. He sees the ice way differently than anybody else at an elite, elite level. And I think that's some of what gets him ticked off. But I don't think he's a horrible teammate. I think there's a lot of coachability issues there.
Yeah.
But again, he is a kid. And I don't want to rip him too much. But the fact of the matter is, all that stuff was out there. It was out there before. And if San Jose feels confident that they can work around those issues and support him, then good on him, because they're going to get one hell of a player if he gets it figured out.
The seventh selection in the 2018 NHL draft belongs to the Vancouver Canucks.
Quinton Hughes goes to the Vancouver Canucks. We strongly suspected Vancouver was going into this draft and wanted to come out of the first round with a defenseman. That means they didn't take Evan Bouchard. That means they didn't take Adam Bukvist. That means they didn't take Noah
choice.
Dobson. As you know, Kotkaniemi goes, Barrett Hayton goes, Philip Zadina goes to Detroit. Jim Benning had the luxury of a lot of defensemen to choose from. We thought in a lot of ways he was going to take whatever was left over.
I will tell you this, that the Edmonton Oilers, as early as this morning, came close to trading up so they could secure Evan Bouchard. And as they watched the first five picks develop, they said, we think we can get him now. We think if our projections are accurate on how we read this, we may be able to steal him at 10 And sure enough, they're thrilled.
Oh, yeah.
They're doing backflips right now. I don't know if they were joking around, but they're like, maybe he could play in October.
Hey, late birthday. Right shot. That's what they were looking for with players already in the NHL.
And it's a gift from the hockey gods, they think.
He's got a chance. I'm telling you right now, he's got a chance to play as early as next year.
Oilers are happy about Bouchard. That's true. How happy are the Islanders for Noah Dobson?
You know, I'll tell you this. I think the two teams that are sitting there going, I cannot believe how this first round worked out, are Islanders and Detroit.
Oh, going away. Philip Zadina sitting there for Detroit?
Like, we talked in the first segment about how Montreal said center and D, so they stuck with their center. Detroit was the same way, center and D, and all of a sudden Zadina dropped in their lap.
Detroit Red Wings are proud to select from Drummondville, Joe Valeno.
And then Valeno.
Valeno falls in their lap
and
late.
And they thought, like, maybe that second pick they'd go get a D because of the great run on D. And they went with Valeno. And that I love that because that tells me they're thinking best player available, and they truly believe with that process and stuck with it.
Were you surprised that the Leafs traded down? Not at all. Kyle Dubas, analytics. Analytics, right?
I said it today in a bunch of stations. I thought actually the dance partner for them was going to be Montreal because I really thought they were going to get Beaudin there. I think Montreal would have loved to get Beaudin at 25 because they knew he couldn't get much further behind that. So I thought they were going to try and get two of Montreal's seconds and get up and get Beaudin at 25.
This is the new Leafs. I can almost guarantee you that Mark Hunter would not have traded down. He would have taken a pick. And probably the defenseman.
He wouldn't have traded down. Nicholas Beaudin.
Yeah.
Yep.
Maybe that one is, we'll watch how that develops over the years.
But don't forget that when Dubas and Hunter did run that first one, they did trade down twice and they still got Dermott. So there is a history, but
yes.
I was wondering,
okay.
You know.
Now, hold on. Now, you think they were both in agreement when that happened?
Are you telling me they weren't?
I'm just asking you.
I don't know.
No, I'm not telling you anything. I'm just wondering, one would have the reputation to trade down.
Yes.
One would have the reputation to take the pick. Who won?
Who won in terms of?
Who got their way?
Well, Dubas got his way because they moved.
And who ended up the general manager?
Dubas.
Okay.
I took me a second to figure
that took way longer than it should have, by the way.
I'm not that bright.
You gave me the impression that they both decided to trade down.
No, I'm saying when they worked in tandem, that's what it was. I see what you're saying.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
I'm sure they had a discussion there in terms of one guy likes to pick, the other guy likes to trade down. Well, one guy obviously won.
Boakfist and Hughes both go before Bouchard and Dobson. Do you read anything into that?
For me, Dobson's the second best defenseman available. Period, end of story, and I think in time we'll see that bear itself out. Dobson does a lot of those things that those smaller guys do. He does it with size. He does it as a right shot, and he's just scratching the surface right now. I mean, this guy's so in tune with the game. His upside is off the charts, kind of like Keandre Miller. Upside off the charts. I truly think we're going to look back 5 years from now, maybe six, and discover that Noah Dobson is right behind Rasmus Dahlin as being the next best defenseman to come out of this draft.
It's funny because Brian Burke was talking about this on your panel earlier on this evening, and he was talking about, is this the way the game is evolving? And it's, listen, we know it's a copycat game and you ape whatever was successful before, but if you firmly believe that smallish mobile defenseman is the way that the game is going, then you do things like taking Quinton Hughes over Noah Dobson. And you do things like taking Adam Boakfist ahead of Evan Bouchard. We saw that tonight.
But you assume that the big guy can't do what the small guys do. Well, you can't walk the line like Quinn Hughes, but I promise you Noah Dobson will defend better than Quinn Hughes.
Washington Capitals just won the Stanley Cup. Do they have a smallish defenseman?
No.
So, I mean, Brian Burke, I saw his checklist tonight on the television show.
How has this process changed when you're picking a player from maybe 10 years ago to now?
Well, we have rules at the table. We at the scouts, we have rules. So these would be the rules in 2008. Always the best available athlete. Skating skills needs to improve. So we can improve your skating. If it's not great, focus on what they can be, not what they are. Focus on North Americans in the bottom six and the bottom pair. We don't want Europeans doing the blue-collar work. Size carries a premium. No variance from the list. Now fast forward 10 years. And this would be the list. It's going to be a little bit different. Focused on skating. The league has changed.
Speed. And there's no question that we've seen that over the last 18 months to 2 years, how quick everyone is. But I tell you what, you watch Washington play, pretty big team. Vegas, pretty fast team for three rounds.
Yeah, but then we just had two years down of the Pittsburgh Penguins winning back-to-back Stanley Cups.
Yeah, but you know what? Pittsburgh's a tough team, too.
I'm not saying, but I mean, it's not like Chris Letang is Mike Rathje. Yeah.
Shut the speed down.
Yes, they did.
Okay? So, once again, I think, of course, it's a copycat league, but I'm sitting there going, all things being equal, still love the big guy in this game.
That's what I'm saying. If the big guy can do a lot of the things that the small guy can do, why not go with the big guy?
What this playoffs remind me of, and that's why I think it's so hard to draft, is how much different the regular season is in the playoffs. It's like, you know, the regular season, like, there's much less hitting, it's a lot less physical, and then the game is called differently. Then the moment the playoffs start, it's a mean game. Because there's so much on
games,
the line.
You gotta pace
what are you saying, Elliot? The guys don't play hard during the regular season?
Not like they play in the playoffs. Not like they play in the playoffs.
What are you saying? They're mailing it in, Elliot?
I don't know if I would say
that. What you're saying, Elliot? They're not earning their paychecks?
For those fans that pay their hard-earned
like
money.
Like my kid.
But you need that style to get you there in the regular season.
We have a family member we call the Twister. They twist everything we say and mangle it. You're the Twister.
I don't know, Elliot. I think you just called out every National Hockey League player from October to April 12th.
It's called 700 Players Soft. Way to go, Elliot. Well done.
I'm going to get you the T-shirt, the Twister.
Columbus drafts Liam Foudy. I know you like him. London Knights.
You know, in terms of my projections, both him and Ty Dellandre, I think, went a lot higher than most people expected. They pretty much went in the range in which I had both guys. I mean, you think about Basil McRae with Columbus. He's the guy who actually drafted Foudy when he was still the GM of the London Knights. So you have that intimate knowledge. You look at the testing, off the charts. You look at the speed game. He checks all of those boxes. And then you look at coming out of the London Knights factory, and you have to think that he's only going to get better with all the minutes he's going to end up playing next year.
Down to Jeff Merrick with the family. Now in 1980, 4x100 relay, we called her Francie Garreau. Now she is France Garreau, and she is the mother of Liam Foudy, selected in the first round by the Columbus Blue Jackets. You won a silver medal. Your husband, Sean, won a Grey Cup playing in the CFL. Where does this rank in the totem pole of family athletic accomplishments?
Oh, it's amazing. It's incredible. I never thought that this would happen, and I'm so happy and excited for Liam.
You know, he was so outstanding at the combine, really distinguished himself, and it seemed as if your family had a philosophy that was build the athlete first and the hockey player second. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that's correct. Liam did lots of different sports growing up. About 10 sports a year with his high school, and then he would play hockey, double-A hockey, then he went to play triple-A, so we always believed in playing, doing different sports.
It's a wonderful philosophy. Outstanding achievement. Yes. Congratulations to your family tonight.
Thank you.
Tara Sloan.
Well, here with Liam, your mom was just talking about all the different sports you played. Now, she's a track athlete. You're an exceptional track athlete. What kind of edge do you think that gave you at the combine? Because you killed it.
Yeah, I think it definitely helped me a lot. I did pretty well at it. And I think playing all those sports, it definitely helped me out a lot and got me here.
I know initially your mom wanted you to stick with track. Do you think maybe she's okay with this now?
Yeah, maybe at the time she wasn't, but now I think she's definitely happy with the decision.
One of the things that we see in him, we see in other players as well, Sarah Noel would be one. He didn't go in the first round. He'll go tomorrow in the second, is you build the athlete first and you build the hockey player second. I know that a lot of parents get caught up in that you got to play 12 months of the year. And you don't want to specialize till late, but Liam Foudy is one of those guys that specialized late. I mean, it really wasn't until he got out of the Markham Majors organization, in the GTHL, that he started to take hockey seriously. And it was more than just something that was fun.
Same thing for Miller. I mean, Rick Helling was here. Rick Helling was his football coach, you know, so obviously had an impact till, you know, a significant point in his younger life. So, I mean, that's a whole debate for another show.
One of the things I discussed at the beginning of the broadcast was which team was going to send the most players into the end of the first round. London Knights ended up sending two with Evan Bouchard. The Halifax Mooseheads, we thought, could send as many as three. They ended up sending one.
Drummondville.
And Philip Zadina. Drummondville sends two.
Yeah.
And that's because of the defenseman that went. And then Joe Valeno went. And who saw that coming? Hey, Sam Cousins, who saw the defenseman go before the center? But the United States, the development program, the national junior team, they put together, and you're going to see more that are drafted on Saturday, continues to bear fruit. And we saw it again this year, whether it's Oliver Wallstrom, you mentioned Keandre Miller, like Joel Farabee goes, like every single year. And next year is going to be the same. I know that Brian Burke wasn't too hot on Farabee. I thought that he kind of surfed on Hughes and Wallstrom a little bit.
Well, I think there were some issues that came to light late in the conversation about Farabee and some of his experiences toward the end of the season in the program.
What are we talking about here?
Well, the understanding was that he kind of wanted to be the guy. And then when Jack Hughes showed up and Wallstrom, and those two are going off, now Farabee's sort of like a sidecar on that line. I don't know if he appreciated that.
I should have asked you this off the top, Nick. Tell us your draft day.
My draft day, it was a Saturday, Mario's draft, 84.
Yeah.
That was the first year I was eligible. I had 12 goals and 11 assists my first full year in junior hockey, and no one ever told me I was going to get drafted. Didn't go. Checked the paper the next day, rifling through the first round, second round, and all I remember is saying, oh, I'm better than him. Oh, my God, that guy got drafted. I'm better than him. This guy got drafted. He's overweight, for God's sakes. And yeah. So just go back to junior.
Just go back.
Go
North
back,
Bay,
have another
Templeton.
Good year, and maybe get invited to a training camp. And then sure enough, a week later, I got a call from Bob Clark, sitting in my kitchen, eating a big watermelon with my dad and my sister. My sister answers the phone.
Was it seedless watermelon?
No. There was no seedless back then. That's how old we were talking.
Elliot. Picked up the landline.
That's right. She says it's Bob Clark on the phone. I'm like, stop screwing around, please. She goes, no, I think it's somebody named Bob Clark from the Flyers. I'm like, pick it up. It took me about a minute to find out it's legit. Said that we were thinking about drafting you, but we thought if you slid, we'll invite you a training camp. So I looked at my agent, my dad.
Your dad.
Dad, Bob Clark's on the phone, wants me to go to training camp. He goes, Philadelphia. You know, Philadelphia is philos. Philos in Greek is brotherly love. I'm like, Dad, seriously, I don't need a Greek lesson right now.
That's awesome.
I just got to figure out if we should go. He goes, yeah, go. So I went. Training camp, spent 10 days there.
Yeah.
Bob Clark calls me in his office, says, and I'm thinking he's just going to send me back to junior and thanks for the experience. And he says, I invited 15 guys to training camp. I have one contract for them. I want to give you the contract. I'm like, great, where do I sign?
Sweet.
And he looks at me like I just fell off a turnip truck. And he goes, got an agent? Where's your agent? I'll talk to him. I go, I don't have an agent.
I love this story.
I go, you don't have an agent? I go, nope. I go, do I need one? He looks at me, he goes, and you see the wheels turning, eh? I could really, I can get this guy for nothing. Yeah. And he's like, big pause. Yeah, you probably should have an agent. He goes, you know any? I go, nope. I go, do you?
No way.
Yes. I said, do you? And he just starts smiling. Then he goes behind and he pulls a Rolodex out. And he starts spinning around.
That's awesome.
And he's like, he's looking at cards.
There's people listening to this, they don't even know what that is.
He's looking at cards now. And he pulls one out. And he goes, now let's try this one. Dials up. And all I hear is, Wilbur! Wilbur! Bill Waters, of course. Wilbur. Yeah, I got a Toronto kid. I want to get him on a contract. Can you help him out? Yeah, yeah, for 4%, it's the easiest thing to say yes, right?
Oh, that's an awesome
my start.
Story. That's unbelievable.
That was my start to the NHL.
That's fantastic. So the draft wasn't ever a big thing for you, just thought, not going to happen.
Listen, wasn't a dumb guy, relatively speaking.
Yeah.
I could figure out if anybody told me I should go, I'll go, but no one told me anything. And, you know, I only scored 12 goals, but I actually had a really good playoff run. We got knocked out in the first round, I believe, to Hamilton. But I had a good playoff, and it was enough, I think, for Bob Clark or some of the scouts to say, yeah, let's invite this kid.
Did anyone in your organization say to you, you know, Nick, there's people watching you? Did that ever happen?
No. I mean, listen, again, we know it's major junior A hockey. Yeah. We could look up in any corner of any rink and see a dozen scouts. We knew that the games were being watched.
But they never talked to you?
But nobody in particular came up to me and said, listen, we're interested in you. Just didn't work that way.
Who were the big guys that you played with that might have drawn the attention of some of those guys?
Kevin Hatcher.
Oh, yeah. So there was people 15th watching.
15th overall.
Oh, yeah.
Or 16th overall, I think, to Washington that year. I think Billy Holder went in second or third round, I think. A year later, maybe. Bill Holder's draft was a year later. But listen, I mean, Bert Templeton's teams, there was never short of scouts believing that, you know, he had an eye for talent.
That's a great story.
I love that story.
Nick, great story. Great job in the playoffs. Great job in the regular season. Enjoy your offseason, Nick Kyprios.
All right, guys.
31 Thoughts continues in a moment.
Oh, Kip, that's a great story. That's a great story. Wilmer.
The all-new 2018 GMC Terrain is the compact SUV thoughtfully designed with you in mind. With features like the Traction Select system to revolutionize how you adapt to the road, a fold flat front passenger seat to give you up to 8 feet of cargo space, and an innovative electronic precision shift system to make shifting easier than ever, the 2018 GMC Terrain is truly mighty like a pro. GMC, we are professional grade. I don't know how we're going to top that great Nick Kyprios story. Well, the day he didn't get drafted and end up getting an agent out of Bobby Clark, the general manager that's trying to sign him to the Philadelphia Flyers. But Sam Cosentino, when you walk away from the rink tonight and you're in your Uber on the way to the hotel room and you maybe go up for dinner, and by the time you make it back to your hotel room, what's your takeaway going to be from the first round?
You know, what's funny, Jeff, you and I talked a lot about this, and I think we did on the previous, but I said that this draft was going to look a lot like 2008.
Yep.
Well, 14 set a record. There was 12 taken that year. Of that group, we talked about Doughty and Pietrangelo and Carlson emerging as number ones, all right shot guys. We saw a lot of right shot guys go in this one. We saw Dahlin lead the way. I think he's going to be a true number one down the road. And I think someone is going to emerge of that group to be a number one as well. And it's, I don't know if it's Boqvist or it's Hughes or Dobson or Bouchard or whoever the case might be. But I think you're going to see a lot of the defensemen, the way the game is going, play a lot of games in the National Hockey League. So it was somewhat predictive in that regard. But a record 14 defensemen. And, you know, jumping up on some of the centers as well. I thought for a while they were neck and neck, seven centers, I think, and seven D-men through the first, 23 picks, I think was what we saw.
So who are the guys, you know, round two that are still left, who you look at and say, I cannot believe this guy is still here?
Akil Thomas.
Sarah Noel.
Yeah.
Ryan McLeod. Bodie Wild, although I heard a lot of interesting things about Bodie down the stretch. But if you go back to the middle of the year, the midterms, I think people would have had him inside of 15.
Mm-hmm.
So there were some things there that came to light that a lot of teams didn't like, and I talked to a lot of teams about that. Olofsson might be another guy.
Jacob Olofsson,
that you'd see go early. Tychonic will be a guy that'll go on the top 45 here. So there are a few guys. You know, I thought Alexiev was a bit of a reach there for Washington at 31, but they don't pick again for a while. So they seem to be pretty honed in on him, and they do a pretty good job in the Western Hockey League. I mean, good job with Braden Holtby for sure.
You know, funny, like, this was the latest a player from the Western Hockey League was ever taken in a draft.
Yeah, it was a bad year. The old ones are really good, though.
So like next year we'll be
talking about a lot of really good Western Hockey players. Just a down year, one of those cyclical things.
Yep.
Just two guys, though, Smith and Alexiev, and they're, you know, Alexiev got in just under the wire.
Yeah, next year that changes. Western Hockey League's back with more players that are going into the draft. This was a curious one. I'm having a hard time sort of wrapping my head around everything that we just saw. Sam, I think we said there's going to be about 50 players we should prepare for that have a chance to make it into the first round. Maybe pare that down to 40, but was there one, maybe Jacob Bernard Docker was, I think, maybe the one for me.
Yeah.
Was there one for you that you just went, whoa, that one's way out of left field?
Well, you put me on to him, but Johansson was the guy.
Delandria higher than you thought? That was one that blew a couple of guys. You had him at 15, eh? Yeah. I had a couple of guys who said they really liked him, but they thought that was high.
He played on a really weak Flint team. Nicholas Camano gets traded last year. Will Bitten gets traded. Like, that was a really challenged Flint Firebirds team, right? But and that too, and you mentioned that on the broadcast. And but if you look at all the big stage events for Ty DeLandre this year, back to the Ivan Hlinka, outstanding. Top prospects game, one of the best players on the ice. U18, one of the best players for Team Canada. Whenever the stage is huge, DeLandre always performs. He always, all season long.
And even
almost a point of game guy.
Character through the roof. I want to be the solution to the problem in Flint. Then they make all those trades. He walks up to the office, says, guys, you need me to take on a bigger leadership role? No problem. I'm ready to accept that challenge. Nice. Awesome. Awesome stuff out of that kid.
What about you, Freach? What's your takeaway?
My takeaway was this draft was a huge success for Dallas because the building had air conditioning.
Yes.
Man, it's even hotter here than Vegas. You know what? This is a completely different thing. I love the Medano Ben thing.
Jim Neal.
Being selected in the NHL entry draft is both an honor and a privilege, whether picked first overall or 129th. With that said, to make our selection, I would like to introduce the first overall pick from the 1988 entry draft and the 129th pick from the 2007 draft. Ladies and gentlemen, Mike Medano and Jamie Benn.
Yeah.
I thought that was great. I loved it. I thought
the banter was good.
The banter was good.
It's good to be back in Big D. Scary to think it's been 30 years since 1988 came around, and it's been a wonderful trip, a great experience. This night tonight was one of the fondest memories I've ever had in my life, and I hope all the kids enjoy it, absorb it. It's a great feeling. And being up on the stage, I know, Jamie, you didn't have a chance to be up on the stage.
They definitely don't let the fifth rounders come up on stage, but it's a pleasure to be up here with you.
Well, it goes to show you don't you prove you don't have to be a first rounder to win an Art Ross trophy.
I'll trade that Art Ross trophy that me and my teammates won for that Stanley Cup banner any day.
This is an interesting week for the league. I think like they didn't have a host at the awards, and they let some players lead it. I thought Luongo was great. I thought George McPhee's speech was great. I thought then they opened with those five guys on the stage. I thought it was really good.
Yeah.
I like that we're seem to be heading into a time when the players' personalities are being allowed to come out more.
Yeah.
And I think that's really big for the National Hockey League. Yeah.
So let's wrap this podcast up so people can listen to it.
Yes.
Sammy, great job tonight.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Outstanding
great
work. Well done, Freach. Outstanding work as well. Thanks for joining us. 31 Thoughts back sometime next week. Nick Kyprios.
Thanks, Emil, for sending
us up. For stopping by. Very good.
Oh, John Woo's over there.
Yeah. Thanks for lending us your ears. We'll return next week for 31 Thoughts, the podcast. Thanks for joining us from Dallas.